Church, it's great to see you today. Thank you very much for being a part of our services here at the Azalea City Church of Christ. I do want to say, as was mentioned earlier, thank you for those who may be visiting with us, and I hope you feel welcome, and we hope you know you're our honored guest. I do want to say that I know that my Redeemer lives, and I know that you do as well. Job did, even in a time of darkness. That's the message that we really want to portray, that we want to paint this upcoming week to our children and our families. But we can't do that with empty pews. Truth be told, I don't know if Vacation Bible Schools, when I was coming up here at Azalea City, and I'm just going to throw it out there, right? Jeff did some preacher counts that we probably, you know, were preacher counts. But I can't say that I know we said we had 500. I don't know if we've ever, Scott, you can attest, I don't know if we've ever had 500. But we've had some big crowds. Hey, Vacation Bible Schools all across the boards, people are busy and they don't want to go to them. They don't want to participate. Our numbers have still been relatively good. And I still believe this year it will be. But just because the trend is people don't support Vacation Bible Schools, folks, that doesn't have to be our trend. I want to issue a challenge to you and to me and to all of us. Number one, that I will be here every night. Listen, I mean, we're not talking about much sacrifice, right? This is going to be a lot of fun. This is going to be a lot of great opportunities. So I want to challenge the adults. Justin would want me to tell you, you have two phenomenal teachers in the adult class, wouldn't you, Justin? Now, Justin and I will be teaching the adult class. So don't hold that against us is what we're trying to tell you. Adults, fill this place up. Teach these children it's important to you. Teach them that. Is it important to you? That's a question you have to ask yourself. Teenagers, I want to challenge you. There have been times when we've had to take the balcony, we've had to take the last five or six rows because we had such a big teen class. We've had 50, 60, 70, 80 people in our teen classes before. I want to challenge y'all. You've got friends. You've got friends. I know. Call them. Children, raise your hands, children. Raise your hands. If you're not a teenager or an adult, you're a child, children. Okay? I want to challenge y'all to not only be here every night, but to bring people with you. Fill this place up because we know that our Redeemer lives. And we want the world to know our Redeemer lives. And we're going to do that in a fun way. We're going to paint the story. We're going to paint the picture. And I want to talk to you today about a dreary picture. I'm just going to be completely frank with you, this has not been an easy Vacation Bible School skit to write. Because Job is a sad story. It's a depressing story. It's a story that if you look at the Hebrew word for the title of Job, it means persecuted or one persecuted. The Greek and Latin, of course, call it Job, but that is exactly what it is. It's about a persecuted man. A man who loved God, a man who said in his scripture, and we put it on our shirts and we sing about it today, I know that my Redeemer lives. But there's a man who was depressed. You see, people like me, I am depressed. And I'm not ashamed to tell you. I have been diagnosed with it clinically. I take medicine for it every day. You've heard me tell this story. And some of this today I'm going to talk to you about, I shared a few weeks ago at Faulkner University on their lectureship, and I've shared some of this in bits and pieces here throughout the years. But I want you to know, for a person like me, there's not a verse in there that says, this is how you overcome it. But I can look at Job, and even though it doesn't say, hey, I'm depressed, there's a fly right there. It doesn't say, hey, I'm depressed. It tells us he's depressed. And you want me to list that for you? Turn in your Bibles, if you will, to Job chapter 6. You want to hear what depression sounds like? Johnny mentioned hope today in his wonderful ninth man presentation. Kent prayed for hope today. Well, I want everyone to know that there is hope because our Redeemer lives. Johnny talked about He's not on a statue somewhere because He's not dead. You see, our Redeemer lives. And Jesus Christ, our Redeemer, wants us all to have hope that one day will become reality when we see Him face to face. But listen to Job now, a man who loved God, a man who served God, a man who is way more faithful than I've given him credit for over the years. I mean, I've built Job up, but he did a lot of great things. But listen to what he says in the middle of all this in Job 6, verse 2. Oh, that my grief... Anybody struggling with grief today? He said that my grief were fully weighed and my calamity laid with it on the scales. For then it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. You talk about heavy grief. You talk about a heavy heart. He said, if I could put it on the scales, my calamity, my trouble, my misery, and I could weigh it, it'd weigh more than all the sand on the sea. Therefore, my words have been rash. Anybody ever cried out because your words are rash? Anybody ever been so low, so miserable, so hurt, so without hope, needing to be renewed, needing to be refreshed, that you've cried out in anger, that you've cried out in rash? I have. Job goes on to say, for the arrows of the Almighty are within me. Now I want you to think about that. He said, God took a bow and arrow and shot them right through me. His arrows are in me. That's how miserable I am. My spirit drinks in their poison. Not only were they arrows, God shot poisonous arrows at him and his spirit's drinking it all in. The terrors of God are arrayed against me. Does the wild donkey bray when it has grass? Does the ox bow over its fodder? Can favorless food be eaten without salt? Or is there any taste in the white of an egg? My soul refuses to touch them. They are as loathsome food to me. Oh, that I might have my request, that God would grant me the thing I long for, that it would please God to crush me, that He would loose His hand and cut me off, that I would still have comfort. Though in anguish I would exult, He would not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One. And we could keep on reading. This is a man who's miserable. This isn't a man who's not faithful to God. This isn't a man who's not just claimed to be Christian. Of course, you understand today, we're Christians. Job was a godly man. Okay, Jesus Christ had not died. But humor me here. Job didn't just claim to be Christian. He didn't just get baptized and show up for a few church services and say, hey, I'm good. This is a man who worshiped all the time. This is a man who taught Bible class. This is a man who would even preach on occasion if need be. He would definitely evangelize to his family, to his friends, to the lost of the world. And this is a man that God said, hey, Satan, have you considered my servant Job? And Job went through this, and Job feels like God is shooting poisonous arrows into his heart. He's crushed. He's devastated. Now let me tell you about me. I've never lost a job. I've never lost a child. I've never lost a spouse. I've not lost a parent. I've never lost a home. All the things that we would just pile on us today and say, hey, yeah, this is why you're depressed. I've been raised, my parents have been married for a long time. I was raised in a hard-working middle-class family who they provided for me. I've never not had anything I needed or even wanted. I mean, God's always taken care of me. I have no reason to be today. I've not been through what Job has been through. But there are sometimes, no matter how faithful, no matter how strong, no matter how much we preach, we know that our Redeemer lives. We are crushed down on the ground. Sometimes we feel we don't have hope. Depression is a crazy thing. I believe it affects everyone. I believe some can't get over it, and I believe some just go through short seasons of it. Sometimes it's seasonal. Sometimes it's long-lasting. Sometimes you never get over it. But here's some facts about it. Of the estimated 17.5 million Americans who are affected by some form of depression, 9.2 million of them have major or clinical depression. Two-thirds of people suffering from depression do not seek necessary treatment. How about that? That's millions of people are not seeking help. 80% of all people with clinical depression who have received treatment significantly improve their lives. 80%. The economic cost of depression is estimated at $30.4 billion a year, but the cost in human suffering cannot be estimated. By the year 2020, that's next year, the World Health Organization estimates that depression will be the number two cause of lost years of healthy life worldwide. Major depression is 1.5-3 times more common among first-degree biological relatives of those with a disorder than among the general population. My kids, I have to watch out for it. I mean, I can see anxiety. I can see all the signs now that I have. Here's some facts that aren't facts about depression. Okay? Depressed people are constantly miserable and constantly alone. See, that's what we think, right? Hey, if somebody's depressed, that they're just constantly miserable. No, that's not the case all the time. Yes, there are certainly those, but sometimes, you know, I can be depressed and 300 of my closest friends around me. I mean, that's just not always true. It also means, another fact that's not a fact is depression just means being sad. Yeah, that's part of it. You're down, but it's not just being sad. Here's another fact that's not a fact. And what I mean by that is people say these are facts. Antidepressants don't work. That's not true. I take one every day. Depressed people just need to snap out of it. Don't ever say that to a depressed person. A lot of people have. Maybe I had one time. But if somebody walks into my office to need counseling, and Justin and I are going to be doing this more and more, you know, we foresee with the degrees we'll be blessed with. But when people walk in and they are depressed, the worst thing we could say is, hey, just snap out of it, man. Just wake up. Study your Bible more. Pray more. Go to church more. Some say that only, for whatever reason, only women and old people get depressed. That's not true. Job had it all. He had it all, according to the world. I mean, look back at Job 1. Look back at it. I know this is not your typical sermon, but when I'm going to teach on Job, I don't know. I mean, this is what it's about. Job chapter 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and shunned evil. It's a good guy. A religious guy, a great Christian guy, we call him in today's standards. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, full family. They were all born to him. His possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, a very large household, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. He was rich. Okay, today those animals and sheep would be millions of dollars, okay? I mean, he was running a major corporation. Now, his children liked to party, and that bothered Job. His children would go, and they'd have parties, and they'd do things that... And you know what Job would do for his children? He'd make sacrifice for them. That's how good of a guy he was. Again, a guy that had everything. He had a wife that supported him, and one day it was all taken away except the one who, his wife, who told him to curse God and die. But the point I'm trying to tell you is this, that if we're not careful, we can allow life circumstances to get us down. You know what Job did a lot that that I see a lot of people do today. He blames God. Now again, he didn't curse with his lips, but he's saying God did this to me and God, and listen, God did allow it, so I get that, okay? I get where he's coming from. But do you know who actually did those things, right? It was Satan. Satan is the prince of this world. Satan is the one who tries to get you to blame God. Satan is the one that allows disease to happen, or we have disease through him because we have death through him. Satan is the one who is behind the violence. Satan is the one behind the hatred. Satan is the one who is behind all the evil in this world that all weighs down on us if we allow it, because the world can weigh us down and it leads us to negative living and negative thinking. There's the all or nothing thinking. What does that mean? Looking at things in black or white with no middle ground. In other words, if I fall short of perfection, I'm a total failure. You ever been there? It's black or white. There's no middle ground. Hey, I'm either happy or sad. I'm either fat or right. I'm either whatever. The way we look at ourselves, the way we are. My bank, I've either got enough for my bills or I don't. The world's caving in or it's not. You see, when that happens and we can't think rationally, we lose our hope. We forget. We forget what reality is. That's where Job was in the middle of all this. He forgot what real was. There's the overgeneralization attitude. Generalizing from a single negative experience, expecting it to hold true forever. I can't do anything right. That's an attitude I've had. You know, everybody's against me. Well, that's not true. There may be one against you. Kind of like Elijah said, there's nobody else but me. God said, that's not true. But sometimes we feel that way, right? We overgeneralize things because we feel like there is no hope. I need to be renewed. I need to be woken up. And I might need beyond help of just snapping out of it. There's the mental fiber. Ignoring positive events and focusing on the negative, noticing the one thing that went wrong rather than the things that went right. You ever been there? You're trying to work on a project and you're not feeling well and you're rash with your words and everything and something goes wrong and you may as well tear it all down and start over again. There's the jumping to conclusions attitude. Making negative interpretations without actual evidence. You act like a mind reader when this happens. He must think I'm pathetic. I'll be stuck in this dead-end job forever. There's the emotional reasoning, believing that the way you feel reflects reality. I feel like such a loser. I really am no good at anything. There's the shoulds and should not attitude when we get to this point, the clouded mind. Holding yourself to a strict list of what you should and shouldn't do and beating yourself up if you don't live by your own rules. And then there's the labeling attitude. Labeling yourself based on mistakes and perceived shortcomings. I'm a failure. I'm an idiot. I'm a loser. You see, God has never and will never make a mistake. He's never made a mistake, nor will he ever make a mistake. And there's not a person in this room that's a mistake. You're here for a reason. You know, I've heard people say that before. Oh, this was a mistake. This was a surprise. No, God has everybody here for a reason. It happens for a reason. We have to find out what our purpose is. Job is in the middle of a crisis. He's in the middle of facing the most stressful thing a person can. Not only does he have to bury one child, he has to bury 10. Think about that. Not only did he lose a little of his income, he lost it all. Well, his health's still good. No, he loses that too, right? Here is a man who is at the pit of misery. Here is a man who has nothing but friends that show up, they don't speak for 7 days. Think about that. They sit there for 7 days and don't say a word to him. And finally, Eliphaz and all the rest of those guys speak up and say, "What in the world did you do wrong?" By the way, if I am in that situation, and you guys are my friends, don't show up and be the first thing you ask me is what I did wrong. Give me a hug or something, okay? Say a prayer with me or something before you ask that. But that's the first words out of them. What did you do wrong? Why are you so evil? Why did you hurt God so much? Why are you such a sinner? You see, that was the mindset. And so Job is depressed. But there's hope. Job, the book of Job, teaches those of us who are depressed, those of us who are struggling, those of us who have hit rock bottom, those of us who are just writhing in pain, whether it's physical, emotional, or spiritual, please hear this today. Our Redeemer lives. And there's hope. Here's what I want you to think about with that hope. First of all, the first thing we've got to do to get out of this or recognize that we need help is we've got to be honest. We've got to be honest. Job chapter 7, beginning in verse 1. Here's what Job says. Has not man a hard service on earth? I mean, that's a great point, isn't it? Did anywhere God say, hey, man, your time on earth is going to be just easy? No. He cursed Adam and cursed the ground. He said, it's going to be hard. Jesus said in John 16:33, in this world you will have tribulation. He didn't say you might. He told Ananias, you come and teach Saul because he's useful to me. I'm going to show him the things he must suffer. Never did God say it's going to be easy. And Job recognized that in one of these moments here in Job 7. He says, has not man a hard service on earth, and are not his days like the days of a hired hand? He said, like a slave who longs for the shadow. Think about that. On those hot days, all he wants is just a little bit of shade. And like a hired hand who looks for the wages. So I am allotted months of emptiness, and nights of misery are apportioned to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise? But the night is long. Oh, I've been there. Not in Job's struggle with what he's been through, but I've been in that depressed moment when those nights crawl by and I can't sleep and I have insomnia. Those nights are forever. He said, and I am full of tossing till the dawn. My flesh is clothed with worms and dirt. My skin hardens and breaks out afresh. That's the boils that are on his body. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and come to their end without hope. You know what Job is saying there? I'm hurting. I'm hurting. Women, statistically, have been more depressed than men, according to statistics. But you know what I believe it is women are just more open than men. I mean, think about it. We come from the, hey, suck it up, boy. You know? Don't cry mentality. You got to be macho. You got to be tough. And listen, I am all about raising men to be men. Okay? I want my son to be a man. But I also want us to understand, men, that sometimes we're hurting. Women, we're hurting. Mamas, daddies, we're hurting. And you see, that's what the world out there doesn't think we care. We fill this place up because there are a lot of people out there hurting. But sometimes we forget to be honest. How are you today? Oh, I'm fine. I'm just fine. No, I'm pretty miserable. I'm pretty miserable. I've learned over the years that I've got to open up about it. When I have down moments, when I have moments that I can't just go into a room and shut the door and never come out again, which is what I've wanted to do, I've got to talk to somebody. Sometimes my wife says, hey, why don't you call one of the elders and talk to them? Because they listen and they understand and I can be honest. You see, honesty is how we start to heal. I've got a problem. I've got a struggle. I've got a hurt. I don't have any hope. And when we do that, we see and remember the hope that is set before us. So I want you today, if you're struggling, just like Job was struggling, whether you've been through the things he's been through or not, I want you to remember you need to be honest about it. You're not going to ever seek help if you don't start being honest. Number two, we must be open. Looking at the pattern that Job laid before us, Job chapter 2, verses 11 through 13. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that had come upon him, they came each from his own place, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. They made an appointment together to come to show him sympathy and comfort him. And when they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him. They raised their voices and wept, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads. And they sat with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great. Now Job chapter 3, verses 1 through 10. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And Job said, let the day perish on which I was born, and the night, that said, a man is conceived, let that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor light shine upon it. Let gloom and deep darkness claim it. Let clouds dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. He's talking about the night he was born. That night, let thick darkness seize it. Let not it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. Behold, let that night be barren. Let no joyful cry enter it. Let those who curse it curse the day. Who are ready to rouse up Leviathan? Let the stars of its dawn be dark. Let it hope for light, but have none, nor see the eyelids of the morning, because it did not shut the doors of my mother's womb, nor hide trouble from my eyes. Justin, I don't know if we're ready for that. You know, somebody walks into your office and lays that at your feet. They walk into your life and lay that at your feet. Hey, this is what I think about the night I was born. That's strong. But you know what Job is doing to his friends who didn't know what in the world to do for 7 days and seven nights? He's opening up. It was a starting spot. Sometimes when we open up, it's not favorable. It's not fun. We may not like what we're about to hear. But in order to be renewed, in order to have hope, in order to find peace that passes all understanding again, I've got to open up. The wound will not be healed if it's left to fester. Sometimes my little girl gets cut and she wants to wear that Band-Aid for several days. And we're like, honey, we've got to take that Band-Aid off and we've got to wash that wound, and it's miserable for her. But you know, as adults, sometimes we're the same way. We've got this wound on our soul. We've got this wound in our mind. We've got this wound in our heart. And we just have it band-aided. And it's not healing. It's festering until we rip it off, until we say, hey, this is the issue. That hope will be gone. Find a friend. Find a family. Find an elder. Find a preacher. Find a youth minister. Find a counselor. By the way, I am one enough with myself to say that sometimes I need professional help. Sometimes if you come to me, I might say, hey, this is beyond my control. I need to send you somewhere else. You see, that's we've got to be able to be honest and open. But then thirdly, we've got to start being productive. Job chapter 42, I know I've got you all over. It's a big book, but I have just a few minutes to paint the whole picture this morning. Job 42, beginning in verse 1, Job answered the Lord and said, I know that you can do all things. By the way, this is after cursing the night he was born, feeling like he's been shot with poisonous arrows by the Lord. He says, I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore I have uttered what I did not understand. Things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Hear, and I will speak. I will question you, and you make it known to me. I had heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes. You know what he's doing there? He's saying, I need help, Lord. I want to be productive, Lord. I want to snap out of this, Lord. I want to heal, Lord. He's not going to snap out of it without honesty, without openness, without God. Now listen, sometimes modern day time, okay? God's not going to talk to us like he's talking to God, Job right here. But here's what he can say. He can say, hey, I'm in Terry's office. Terry says, hey, go to a counselor. Counselor says, hey, you need medicine. The doctor says, I'll prescribe it. And we leave those pills in there and never take them. That's not productive. Or we feel better and we get off. Listen, I'm not one to just keep taking medicine, okay? But let's tell a diabetic to never take his medicine again. Let's tell a cancer patient never to take their medicine again. You see, it's an illness. It's a serotonin imbalance. I mean, there's something going on, and we've got to find our productive nature. We've got to have purpose, and we've got to get positive. And that might mean getting the help that we need. Job was able to go to the greatest counselor of all, and that's God. And God was able to heal him. He was able to help him. The final thought I want to leave you with today to spell out the word hope is to be eternally minded. Now, I do need to clarify this. If somebody in here is literally, clinically depressed, thinking more about heaven is not always going to help you get productive. But never, ever quit thinking about heaven. Never. Because that's what it's all about. If I miss heaven, I've missed it all. And here's what what God says to Job, I should say, in Job 38, beginning in verse 1. Now, I need you to think about what that, I don't have time to go through all 42 chapters. Job's friends showed up, they all tell him, every one of them, hey, you did awful. What have you done? Blah, blah, blah. Elihu's a breath of fresh air in there. And finally, Job just, after I think it's around chapter 36 or 7 or somewhere, he's done. And God says, it's my turn. It's my turn. And here's what he opens up and says to Job. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for action like a man. I will question you, and you make it known to me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding, who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? Or what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Here's the modern day, hey Job, where were you when I built all this? Job, you think your three friends have this figured out? They don't. He said, Job, I want you to know, when you had all those thousands of sheep and donkeys and all that, and you had the seven sons and the three daughters, I was there with you. And I'm the reason you had them. Yes, Job, I'm the reason Satan did these things to you. I gave him permission to do it. And I was there on my throne the whole time. Job, this earth is tough, this world is tough, but I want you to understand one thing. I will never change. and I will remain on my throne. You see, today, guys, God is in the same place He was. Those of you who've lost a child, the most stressful thing a person can go through. He's in the same place He was when He lost His child. You see, He knows what it's like to hurt. He knows what it's like to see people hurt. He knows what it's like to see others suffer. And He wants us to know that there is hope. There is hope for you, there's hope for me, and there's hope for everybody out there. But that hope came through the sacrifice of His Son. The one who gives us the water that if we drink, we will never thirst again. You know, Jesus said that to a woman who was pretty miserable. It was a woman at the well, Samaria. She had been married several times. She's living with a guy. She was coming out in the middle of the day when it's hot and when it's miserable, and because nobody else would be there to talk about her probably. But she encounters Jesus, and He wants water. But He says, hey, if you drink My water, you will never thirst again. A woman who probably that morning didn't have a lot of hope. But she had a lot of hurt. She had a lot of pain. And Jesus is saying, I am here to give you hope. It's a silly illustration to close, but I think you'll get the point. I'm a very simple-minded person. A couple weeks ago, Bo and I planted a pallet of sod in our backyard. I didn't intend to get a pallet of sod. It was just a good deal that day. So we get it all planted, and of course, it's at a time when the Lord said we didn't need any rain in Mobile, Alabama. So my water bill will be high, so that's part of it if I wanted to keep it alive. But I have some that just died. It just didn't make it. And I thought, well, hey, one or two pieces isn't bad, right? Of a whole pallet of sod. But then yesterday, something unique happened. It rained at my house. It may have rained at yours. I don't know. It rained at mine. And all that watering that I had done, sod was still dead. But then last night, as I let the dog back out, guess what? There's a new growth growing through those pieces of grass because they drank water from God. Today, maybe you feel dead. Maybe you feel alone. Maybe you curse the night you were born. And no matter how much I've watered, or the elders have watered, or your friends have watered, or your family have watered, you are dried up and you are ready to be done. But today, God is still watering. Drink His water. And I promise you, you will be renewed. You will be refreshed. And you will have hope again. Today, if you've not yet been baptized into Jesus Christ, oh, why not today? Today, if you feel like you have no hope, I am one of many that's probably been there with you. But today, I am renewed, refreshed, and I have all the hope in the world. Come and let's pray with you. Let's encourage you. I love you. If you have a need, come right now. Together we stand and sing.